Coming up on Harvard Chan This Week in Health, diabetes decline, the encouraging news about America's battle against this chronic disease. Plus, what can a country's C-section rate tell you about its healthcare system? We'll hear from a researcher who's taking a closer look at the world's most common operation. And marking World AIDS Day, the push to reduce cases of pediatric HIV and AIDS. Hello and welcome to Harvard Chan This Week in Health. I'm Amy Montemuro.
And I'm Noah Levitt. As we begin the show, our hearts are with the people of San Bernardino, California, after a deadly mass shooting there on December 2nd. 14 people were killed in the shooting at a social services center, 21 more were injured. Both suspects were killed by police. It's the deadliest mass shooting in the U.S. since the 2012 assault at Sandy Hook Elementary School.
As investigators search for a motive, we wanted to share some statistics that put this latest mass shooting in perspective. In recent years, the term active shooter has become part of our vocabulary. That's a situation where law enforcement is responding to a shooting in progress. According to the Washington Post, this term, being used both online and in books, has risen dramatically since the 1990s, shortly after the Columbine attacks.
And Amy, like Columbine, this attack involved two shooters, but that is actually incredibly rare. The FBI found that of 160 active shooter incidents in the United States between 2000 and 2013, all but two involved a single shooter.
And a final sobering statistic. There have now been more mass shootings in the United States than days this year. That's according to the Mass Shooting Tracker Project, which tallies incidents in which four or more people are shot. By its count, there have been 355 mass shootings in the U.S. this year. 462 people have been killed, and more than 1,300 have been wounded. Another story we're following this week, some encouraging news about America's battle against diabetes. Noah, statistics out this week from the CDC show that the number of new diabetes cases is starting to decline. According to the data, the rate of new cases fell by about 18% from 2008 to 2014. Last year, there were 1.4 million new diabetic cases, down from 1.7 million in 2008.
And that represents the first sustained drop in diabetes cases in a quarter century. But experts tell the New York Times that they aren't sure why that drop occurred. It's unclear if efforts to prevent obesity, which fuels the most prevalent form of diabetes, type 2, have finally started to work, or if the disease has simply peaked. There is evidence that American diets have been improving. A recent study from the Harvard Chan School estimated that improvements in the American diet from 1999 to 2012 prevented about 1 million premature deaths.
Despite the decline in diabetes and the modest improvement in diet, there's still work to be done. 1 in 10 Americans have diabetes, and it remains the 7th leading cause of death in the United States. While there's no way to prevent type 1 diabetes, which occurs primarily in children and adolescents and is not tied to obesity, there is much you can do to prevent type 2 diabetes, such as eating a healthy diet and maintaining a healthy weight. Visit hsph.me/diabetes to learn more.
And Amy, while the CDC reported that good news about diabetes, there are some mixed results regarding cholesterol rates in America. The number of Americans with high total cholesterol dropped to 11% in 2013-2014. That's a drop of about 2 percentage points from 2011-2012. Researchers at the CDC tell U.S. News & World Report that more Americans are having their cholesterol checked and are being treated. Changes in lifestyle, such as reduced consumption of trans fats and weight loss, could also be a factor in the falling rate of high cholesterol.
But the numbers also show a troubling trend that the percentage of people with low HDL, or the good cholesterol, is on the rise. Nearly 19% of Americans have low HDL, a 3% increase over the previous year. Higher levels of HDL can have a protective effect by clearing bad cholesterol from the bloodstream, but low levels of HDL can be associated with an increased risk of heart disease. As always, if you have questions about your cholesterol, be sure to consult with your doctor or healthcare provider.
The most commonly performed operation in the world is cesarean section, or C-section, ranging from as little as 2% in some countries to nearly 50% in others. And the World Health Organization recommends that C-section deliveries make up no more than 10 to 15% of a country's births.
But a new study from the Stanford School of Medicine and the Ariadne Labs at Harvard Chan School and Brigham and Women's Hospital says that the recommendation should be re-examined. Researchers looked at the relationship between C-section rates and maternal and infant mortality in 194 countries. What they found is that as a country, C-section rate increased up to 19%, those mortality rates declined.
So why is that? We spoke to Alex Haynes, the lead author of the study. He's a surgeon and associate director of Ariadne Labs' Safe Surgery Program. Haynes says that the ability to provide safe C-sections is indicative of a strong healthcare system.
It's clear that if you just started doing elective cesarean sections out of convenience, C-section on demand, even if that quote-unquote improved your cesarean section rate to 19%, that's unlikely to have a significant impact on health outcomes. On the other hand, if you improve your healthcare infrastructure such that women have timely access to emergency obstetrical services, that's going to have a big impact. I think one of the lessons to take home from these data, and one of the stories that's increasingly being told in the global public health world, is about the interconnectedness of healthcare systems. You can't just have a system that provides maternal and child health in isolation from a system that provides surgical services in isolation from primary care. Really, we need strong and healthy healthcare systems that are able to address the healthcare needs of populations in all its different forms, and it's really hard to disentangle them. The kinds of infrastructure you need to have in place to provide cesarean sections are really similar to the kinds of infrastructure you need for other kinds of surgical services.
Haynes adds that researchers found no added benefit in countries where the C-section rate exceeded 19%, indicating that some countries, including the United States, may be overusing C-sections.
On December 1st, people around the globe marked World AIDS Day. It was an opportunity to reflect on the progress that's been made in fighting HIV and AIDS, and to look ahead at the challenges that remain.
An event hosted by the Harvard AIDS Initiative focused on the battle against pediatric HIV/AIDS. Nearly 37 million people around the world are living with HIV, and almost 3 million are under the age of 15. Experts say there has been progress in reducing the transmission of HIV from mothers to infants. It's estimated that more than two-thirds of pregnant HIV-infected women are receiving some type of treatment to reduce this transmission, such as antiretroviral therapy.
But experts say that more work needs to be done because an estimated 1.5 to 2 million HIV-infected women are having babies each year. We spoke to Shaheen Lockman, Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and an adjunct professor at the Harvard Chan School. Lockman says that healthcare infrastructure improvements are needed to protect mothers and infants.
Globally, the issues are women getting tested for HIV in time? Is there a healthcare infrastructure that they can access to get the drugs? Can they get to the clinic? Do they have the money and the time to be able to get there and take the meds? So it's really more of a healthcare infrastructure issue and a testing and knowledge of your status issue than reluctance to take drugs. I think one thing that we have observed and a lot of people have found is that pregnant women are very, very motivated to do whatever they think will be best for their babies. And they are willing to get tested. They're willing to take meds if that's recommended to them. They're very adherent during pregnancy. They will go above and beyond to take care of their unborn baby and then their newborn child.
Lockman says that researchers are looking at potential side effects associated with antiretroviral drugs taken during pregnancy. Despite those concerns, Lockman says the benefits of these drugs far outweigh any negatives.
Finally, this episode, the next time you eat in a New York City restaurant, you may see a new warning on your menu.
That's right. In chain restaurants, a salt shaker icon must now appear next to your menu items that contain 2,300 milligrams of sodium or more.
And Amy, that 2,300 milligrams is the recommended daily limit for sodium, but many Americans eat much more than that. In fact, nearly 70% of U.S. adults are at risk of developing health problems associated with salt consumption. Because of that, the American Heart Association recommends that people in certain at-risk categories limit their daily sodium intake to 1,500 milligrams. For perspective, that's two-thirds of a teaspoon. At-risk individuals include people over age 50, those with high or slightly elevated blood pressure, people with diabetes, and African Americans.
New York City Deputy Health Commissioner Sonia Angel tells NPR that many people don't understand the link between excessive sodium intake, high blood pressure, and the risk of heart disease. She adds that most of the salt Americans consume doesn't come from salt shakers. It's already in the food we're eating.
And Amy, restaurants will have until March 1st, 2016 to comply with the new rules. After that, they'll face fines. So next time you're in New York City, keep an eye out for those salt shakers. Maybe you'll find some surprises in what has the most sodium.
Good to know.
And we'll see if any other cities decide to follow suit. That's all for Harvard Chan This Week in Health. I'm Noah Levitt.
And I'm Amy Montemuro. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes U. Just search for Harvard University. Or find it on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Harvard Public Health. And you can always get the latest health news by visiting our website, hsph.harvard.edu.